B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, this is a leg injury for Jared Stidham, the second-year quarterback who's been in the mix for potentially the starting quarterback job. As of right now, he is on the practice field. He is out at practice. Unclear how much he's actually going to do. From what it was told to me, and this is something I reported with colleague Mike Giardi, he is going to be very limited today. We'll see if he actually does anything, but he is out there with a helmet, kind of sort of going through stretching with his teammates. He's gotten checked out by some doctors over the last little bit. And, you know, if you were wondering for Stidham why over the last 2 or 3 days he maybe hasn't quite looked like himself at practice and his interceptions picked up, just didn't seem, from what I could tell, like he had a lot in the football, this would explain it. This would explain why he has just not been the quarterback he was earlier. And so for Jared Stidham, this is something we're going to have to continue to monitor, and we'll see how much he actually does at practice today.
All right, well, that's Ian Rappaport on the situation at quarterback, where the next guy, the hype train on Jared Stidham, was through the roof, and now he's not even going to make it through the second or third week of training camp. Hip injury, went to a hospital last night, according to Adam Schefter, and Jimmy Stewart's phone underwent an MRI. Apparently the precautionary test came back negative, but he did return to practice today, but was limited. It was a walkthrough anyway, and it feels like Jared Stidham is now going to be shelved or going to be way behind, or the Jared Stidham thing not happening at least this year. I know Chris Gasper has a thought on this. Gasper is powered by the commuter rail. The new summer schedules are still in effect with 200 additional trips per day for better social distancing, and each train continues to be disinfected every day. Wear a face covering on board and in station. Use the mTicket app for contact-free travel and get more details at mbta.com/ridesafer. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm good. How are you?
We are just peachy. What's your take on the Patriots quarterback situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've reached the juncture here where it's time for Bill to stop indulging himself with this fraudulent quarterback competition and actually do what he always says he does, which is what's in the best interest of the team, and that is to get whoever is going to be the primary quarterback, which should be Cam Newton, which will be Cam Newton, ready to play. I mean, they're off tomorrow. Their next practice is Sunday. That will be 3 weeks out from the season opener against Miami. You have a quarterback who's new to the system, who had no offseason. You're in a truncated training camp, and you have no preseason games. Why are you splitting snaps three ways? You don't have time for this. And you already know what Brian Hoyer is. You're not going to learn anything additional about Brian Hoyer. If you need to learn something additional about Brian Hoyer, then you're not a good evaluator of quarterbacks. And I feel like Belichick is a good evaluator of quarterbacks. Hoyer has run your program in the offseason the last 2 years while Tom Brady was out. You know what he can do. His job, being Brian Hoyer, you know what his job is? His job is to get no reps in practice, come off the bench and play. That's his job. That's literally his job, is to get zero reps and then get put in the game and perform. That's his job. That's what backups do. So why are you giving him reps? You have to get Cam Newton ready to play. This whole quarterback competition conceit was nice, but it's time to move on and make sure you put the team in the best position to play.
Wow, if you were still at the Globe, it would, the byline would say Chris Gasper, and the headline, Bill, stop dicking around.
Okay, I was just going to say, when you say Bill pleasuring himself, what do you mean by that?
I think that he likes to create a competition. I think he likes to create an environment that is something where he feels like he's going to test guys. And I think sometimes, to be honest, as much respect as I had for him, and look, he will forget more football by 7 o'clock tonight than I will ever know. But I think sometimes he's so smart and he can get away with so much that he outsmarts himself. And I think this whole, like, sort of, you know, I want to put the pressure on Cam and I want to give Stidham a carrot. And then, you know, Hoyer knows more than both of them, so Hoyer will push both of them, and that's ultimately going to benefit us. It's like, you know, sometimes it's KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. You have a quarterback in Cam Newton who's NFL proven but doesn't know your system, and he needs as many reps as possible to be as good as possible for you once the season starts. How about that? Instead of trying to create this artificial competition that you think will push him and somehow get the most out of him. I think the way to get the most out of him is to give him the majority of the reps and let him learn through those reps.
No, he's the all-powerful Oz, Chris. He wants to push everybody's buttons and give them little tests.
Well, the 8 opt-outs were all by design. I mean, we all know that.
Yeah, just,
this is the same thing.
If Newton's healthy, he's the guy. And I'll tell you, it's a, you know, but haven't we already started to see a little shift? Didn't Newton get more reps yesterday? Like, do you think that is now happening?
No, I don't think we're there yet. I don't think. I mean, there's a shift, but I still don't think we're there yet. And I was at practice the first 3 days. I was not at practice today or yesterday. And while I was there, the reps were divvied up pretty evenly before, you know, between the three guys. Now, obviously different today with Stidham with this hip injury or whatever's going on with him. Cam's getting more reps, but the reps are still being split up. And again, anybody who's been around the NFL and covered the NFL, I mean, Felge, you know this. The job of the backup quarterback is to get very few reps, but still be ready to play. It's all about mental reps. It's not about actual reps. Like, what are the actual reps doing for Brian Hoyer?
So, and you think those are given just to tweak Newton or to, you know, motivate Newton or have this faux competition to get the most out of Newton? You don't think there's any sliver of Bill that wants Hoyer to play or wants Stidham to play?
I do think there's a sliver of him that wants, particularly Stidham, and I would not be surprised if they did end up using two quarterbacks to some degree. You know, I don't think it's going to be a 50-50 split platoon thing, but maybe alternating snaps or something in the red zone. I think there's the Bill's brilliant at getting the most out of his players, and there's a way to maybe capitalize on Hoyer's knowledge of the system without allowing him to get exposed the way he does every time he's a full-time starter everywhere he's been. So if you can sort of limit his reps and use his skill, maybe that works. But I think a lot of this is about using Hoyer's knowledge to try and push the other two guys and then making sure Stidham doesn't check out, thinking he has no chance to win the job, and giving Stidham this carrot. And I just don't think that long-term view they're taking in the long run is really worth it. I was talking to Maz real quick before we came on the air. I'll say this. I can see why they like Stidham. There are times that he makes plays and you're like, man, there it is. I mean, this guy looks like Drew Brees. He looks like a franchise quarterback. And then the next time he'll throw an interception that's undercut by Michael Jackson, you know, or some guy lower on the roster. So that's the thing. There's not a lot of consistency there. And I love how the rush now is like to say, oh, you know, like I heard that Ian Rappaport, and I love Ian, but I heard, you know, what he was saying. Like, that's why he hasn't looked like himself the last couple of days. You know, one, I don't know, maybe Ian was there the last couple of days when I wasn't there, but I didn't see him the first 3 days. And to suddenly say that Stidham looked like that because he's a second-year quarterback and we don't know what he is yet, please. But it's not the hip injury that's making him have three interception practices. It's because he's a young quarterback still figuring it out, and they don't know what he is, and he doesn't know what he is yet. He's inconsistent.
So you would agree with Bedard that says that it looks like Stidham was losing confidence and was starting to doubt himself and starting, you know, to hesitate. He said the player who started out with confident reads and decisive throws is more and more unsure of himself with every passing practice. You're saying that's closer to the bone.
Yeah, I think it's just a performance thing. I don't think you can sit here and say it's all because of the hip that he started throwing some interceptions or just being inconsistent with throws and practice. I mean, I think, you know, the practice stats, Bill said today, you know, sometimes there are mitigating factors there. You know, did the guy run the right route? Like, I'll tell you, there was a practice, I think it was the last one I covered, where Cam Newton had a couple of balls that were, like, behind receivers. He's trying to throw to, like, Isaiah Zuber, who's a undrafted free agent wide receiver, and to Dalton Keene, who's a rookie. And so is the ball behind those guys because the timing's off, the route's not quite right, or is it just an errant throw? You don't know. So, you know, you have to be careful with some of the stats and all that stuff. But when you watch Stidham, you know, I would say this. If the first read is there and he reads it right, the ball comes out really quick and it looks great. I think sometimes when he gets to the second or third read, he's like, Bob Sosi and I talked about this. He's almost like overconfident in his own ability of the offense. He's like, oh, I know this. I'm on my second or third read. The ball should go here. And he kind of throws it almost without looking, and then it gets intercepted. I think he thinks he knows more than he really knows.
Chris, how does a 24-year-old guy hurt his hip without contact? Does that tell you anything?
Well, you know, here's what I would say. There were a lot of injuries in 2011 during the lockout when you didn't have an offseason. And that's the type of injury that can happen when you're not really going through the offseason training program. And you start to get into these practices. And they're, again, he's not getting hit, but there's a lot of repetition there. And when you're not sort of built for that based on spending the entire offseason getting your body in football shape, I could see where you could have some sort of situation like that crop up.
I think it's a horrible sign.
Yeah, for a 24-year-old guy who's looking to win a job, I think it's a bad sign.
It's bad timing. It's bad luck, but I don't think you can put it all on him.
It's a bad look.
A bad look, but I don't think it's his fault. You know, like are you guys blaming him?
Yep.
Yes, I am. Unless Chris, he got tackled or someone ran into him or someone, you know, backed his car into him in the parking lot as he was getting into his truck or something. Like, if it's a contact injury, then that's bad luck. If it's a muscle injury, the kid should be ready to go and dialed in and limber and pliable. If, you know, if that makes you happy.
Well, TB12 is still there. I mean, he could head over to the TB12 Sports Therapy Center. It's still there at Patriot Place. So, you know, I know that the last quarterback, you know, who was going to succeed Brady maybe wasn't let in there, Jimmy Garoppolo. But I think Stidham can walk right up and, you know, they will treat him.
No excuse for a muscle injury. None. Zero. If it's a muscle injury, it's a horrible sign. Horrible, horrible sign. How has Newton looked to you?
I'll tell you this. I think that his ball placement is better than advertised. And what I mean by that, ball placement's different than completion percentage. It's even slightly different than accuracy. And this was written about the other day. I think Tom Curran wrote about it, and I mentioned it earlier in the week. He's pretty good at putting the ball in spots where either only his guy can catch it or the guy can catch it and get yards up the field, which is really important in the Patriots offense. So I know a lot of people like to look at the completion percentage. He ran some sort of college-style offenses with Ken Dorsey and David Shula in Carolina. And I look more at that 1 year he had Norv Turner and completed basically 68% of his passes in an offense that it's not the Patriots' offense, but as Norv Turner has said, there are some commonalities. I think he's a more accurate passer and better with the ball placement than people give him credit for.
So, Mike, I know you and I have had this discussion, but I just want to bring it up because we've discussed it. Newton's completion percentage is 59.6. Okay, career. That's career. What's Brian Hoyer's?
Oh, I would guess, because you're saying it, 58.
59.1. I mean, what's the difference?
Yeah, and one guy knows the offense and one guy doesn't. So, you know, what's exactly your point?
My point is that I'm not sure Hoyer's this you know, surgeon behind center either.
Exactly. He's not. He sucks.
He's 3-13 in his last 16 starts with 10 losses in a row.
That's right. Okay, 10 losses in a row. Mm-hmm.
With who?
Yeah,
is his coach?
But Bill wasn't his coach.
Oh, right. Yeah.
See, it's about the coach.
Mr. Quarterbacks. I forgot. Oh,
Who was Newton's coach when he was going 59.6%?
Norv Turner. That speaks volumes right there. Norv Turner sucks.
No, but the only had Norv for 1 year. I mean, his coach, it was Ken Dorsey was the quarterback's coach. And was it Dave? It's either Dave or Mike Shula was his offensive coordinator, one of the Shula kids. So it's not, you know, he had Norv for the 1 year, and the numbers were good. So,
okay, I got confused. I'm not sure what we just did there. You went back to the Hoyer thing. I'm just getting your read on Newton. Do you see anything with his throwing motion, his arm slot, anything? You know, Zoll looks at him and says he could be compensating for the shoulder surgery, and he's got a different throwing motion.
Look, Zoe knows a lot more about being an NFL quarterback than I do.
Not really.
So I that could be true. I would say from the practices I've watched, I mean, he overthrew Damir Bird, who can fly on a deep ball. I mean, flat out overthrew him. So I don't feel like the arm strength's an issue. In fact, if you ask me between Stidham and Newton, who would I have arm strength concerns about? It would be Stidham. Some of those throws to the hashes, I don't know. It looks like, I mean, he puts a lot of effort into it. It looks a little bit like a discus. You know, he can't always get it out there. Like, when it can come out quick and sort of, you know, in between the numbers, he looks great. But those throws, not the hashes, those throws outside the numbers.
Numbers.
It kind of, he winds up a little, and it takes him a little bit to get it out there. And sometimes it floats. So between those two guys, who would I have the concern about the arm strength? It would be Newton. But this isn't an offense where arm strength matters. I mean, I covered the team in 2008. And Matt Castle was great. And my joke is always that they, you know, when they do those NFL films videos on the 2008 Patriots and they give it a name, they could have called it Sideways, the story of the 2008 Patriots, because that's every pass Castle threw. He threw so many wide receiver screens that year, so many sideways passes. They'll figure it out. This is not an offense where you need a ton of arm strength, but you do have to be accurate and you do have to know where to go with the football and you do have to be able to throw the ball outside the numbers on time.
Okay, so you don't really agree with Zoe on that one. How about Zoe on the Patriots pass catchers? Let's just do this real quick, Jimmy, before we go to break. So the team broadcasters, Zolak and Soucy, have looked at the Patriots pass catchers and can barely contain their disdain.
It's true. Wait to hear.
This is Zoll. This is unicorns and show ponies. And where's the beef? And you know, Pat Patriot. He's like a furry. He has sex in his Pat Patriot outfit. Zolak is such a homer. Listen to Zoll. Give me Zoll number two yesterday, Jimmy, on the Patriots pass catchers.
How the receivers look?
How's the tight ends look?
Am I still on?
Yeah. How are the tight ends?
That's the interpretation here. Ryan Izzo's your best tight end right now.
Oh, God.
So, do you agree that the and you were big on this last year, Chris. Yeah. Does that still apply today? The pass catchers are a real issue?
Yeah, I mean, regardless of who the quarterback is, they're going to have their hands full. They're going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting. Mohamed Sanu, I know, is healthy. He hasn't looked great. I know N'Keal Harry's been out the last couple of days. When he was in there, you know, I tweeted something. He's still slow out of his breaks. He's still slow at the top of the route. I was watching one drill they ran, and he ran, you know, it was just sort of like warm-up drills. You know, you get to the top of your route, you turn around, and you have Nick Caserio or somebody on the staff throwing you a ball, not even a quarterback. And I'm sitting there, and I'm going, get out of the break, get out of the break, get out of the break. And it's taking forever for him to get out of the break. I know we work with that Route King guy. I don't see it. I don't see it. I mean, he still can't get out of the breaks. There's no suddenness to his routes. It feels very lumbering. The kid's talented, but I don't think he's ever going to get a lot of separation. He's going to have to go. You're going to have to throw him back shoulder fades and jump balls and you know, stuff where he can catch it around the line of scrimmage and then use his ability after the catch.
And Chris, I'm sorry, you cut out. You're talking about N'Keal Harry right now, not Sanu, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about N'Keal Harry. Yeah, I mean, Sanu, we just haven't. I just haven't really seen anything from him, good or bad. Sometimes you just forget he's out there.
Oh, great. Basically, everyone down there says Sanu has done nothing. And N'Keal Harry now, is it his second straight day that he missed or his third straight day that he missed?
Second.
Okay. He's not getting on the field either.
Yeah, no, another 24-year-old who can't stay healthy.
I mean, the best-looking receiver, honestly, has been this Devin Ross kid from Colorado, who's kind of a guy that's bounced around like a practice squad. He might be this year's, you know, Chris Harper or one of those guys. I doubt he'll really do anything in the games, but he's kind of looked the best. I think, you know, Gunnar Olszewski's looked good. That's the Patriots' wheelhouse, you know. Little white guy who's quick. They seem to be able to evaluate those guys pretty well. He's looked good. He's looked like he's taken a step forward. He beat Stephon Gilmore clean twice. So, he maybe can help out, but it's Julian Edelman and a lot of wishing and hoping at this point.
Bob Sosi, you think the receivers are bad? Wait till we get to the tight ends.
I mean, mess. Everyone does. Even the team broadcasters are going down there and saying, none of these guys can play. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's like the Red Sox pitching staff. With the Patriots receiving core. It's a complete clown show.
When Zolak and Sosi are saying, and then refusing to answer the question about the tight ends, he says, am I still on? Like, he refuses to even answer the question. It's so bad. Holy crap. Okay, your thoughts with Gasper right after these words. It's Felger and Maz on an agenda-free Friday.
Boston's home for sports. Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's the show the crowd goes wild for. It's Felger and Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
If you ask me, hey, Zoe, we got a game on Monday. Who's your starting quarterback? I think Brian Hoyer's your starting quarterback on Monday. Now, that could change in a week. But I'm telling you what, if I'm anybody that's around Cam Newton right now, I get him and I grab him by two fists by the shirt and I shake him. I'm like, hey, buddy, it's go time. It's there for the taking if you want it. And he just, I tell you what, he's fun to watch, man. I mean, he doesn't stop moving. He's in. Same thing we've seen in warm-ups when we've called games against him and in the game. He's good. He can play. They all can play. They're all different. That's the intriguing thing here. And, you know, we talked to McDaniels. You'll see it Sunday night when you watch the show. They're all different. And there might be something to this three-headed thing. I don't know. I don't know that. I was there one day.
But, I mean, they're intermixing guys with groups and that. I said this, I truly believe it. I looked at Bob, I'm like, you can't get into the who was 10 or 13 or who was this or that, because I look at the practice from start to finish. To me, Brian Hoyer looks the most comfortable guy right now. Stidham looks like he's, it's a guy in baseball or hockey, it's gripping a stick too tight right now, if that makes sense. And maybe Cam has put that pressure on him, and maybe that's what they're looking at.
Two things there, Gasper. One, if the season started Monday, Brian Hoyer would be your quarterback. Agree or disagree? And the second thing, there is something to this two-headed, three-headed quarterback monster. Start with the second thing. You said that in the first segment. You think there is actually a chance of some platooning going on here?
Yeah, I think there is. I think it could throw off other teams. They like the element of surprise down there, and I think it's a way to try and maximize. You know, if you don't have one guy that has the talent of Cam Newton and the knowledge base of Brian Hoyer, then you try and mix and match those things, or Stidham, whatever.
How do you feel about that?
I think it could work. You know, I mean, I don't love it. I do sort of subscribe to the old adage of if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. But I also think it's the Patriots. It's Belichick. If anybody could make it work situationally, it's them. My biggest concern on that, honestly, is not the quarterbacks and how they respond to it. It's what about the other guys on the offense? You know, do they know who's in the game? Do they know what plays are in play? Because like, if Hoyer's in the game, some sort of design run with a lot of misdirection and all this other stuff, orbit motion, all that other stuff, that's not really in play. Or at least it's not, if it's in play, it's not going to be defensed the same way as if Cam Newton's in there. So it sort of puts more mental pressure on the other 10 guys to know who's in the game and how that dictates what plays are in play and sort of what's overall in play from a performance standpoint and what's not.
How do you feel Newton responds to that if he's being platooned?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. You know, I don't know Cam Newton well enough. I would imagine he probably wouldn't be pleased about it. Especially, I mean, put yourself in Cam Newton's shoes, right? You're a guy that's been an NFL MVP. You were the franchise in Carolina. You've taken a team to the Super Bowl, and they're going to platoon you with Brian Hoyer, who's 0-10 in his last 10 starts and is a career backup, or Jared Stidham, who's thrown four NFL passes, one of which was a pick six. I mean, if you're Cam, I could see sort of looking around and saying, like, what are we doing here?
Yep.
Do you want me or do you not want me? Like, in other words, do you want your system or do you want a quarterback?
Right.
I think they want both, and this is maybe the compromise.
That three-headed monster thing is a disaster waiting to happen. It is. It's going to be a disaster.
I mean, at minimum, the three-headed monster needs to be cut down to two, at minimum.
What if they use September, I mean, which they do anyway, Chris, yeah. But they, you know, since there is no preseason,
yep.
It's really a glorified preseason. Like, sure. I keep saying this, you watch a lot of college football. It feels to me like college teams kind of do that. They roll in different quarterbacks, different series, and maybe that's more in the beginning of the year than the end till they settle on something because they have no preseason games. And this is going to be kind of a collegiate year. And what do you think that's possible?
Yeah, and Bill's referenced that, you know, the college teams have to get ready without preseason games. And he has a lot of friends at that level, Kirk Ferentz, Nick Saban. Obviously, Chip Kelly, Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. So he can glean something there. You know, the other thing, though, with, and you're right, using those first four games as sort of like an extended preseason, that was great when you had Tom Brady because you knew you could make it up on the back end. This time, this year, if you do that and you go 1-3 or 0-4, you're not making it up. So for me, every game counts. I don't know if they have the luxury of doing that this year.
All right, I promise we will get to your calls on this. I do want Chris's read on the Celtics without Gordon Hayward, and the draft pick situation on the Celtics has finally finalized and settled. We can now bury this topic with the final analysis, which we will get to after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Felger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
Mads.
The guy's psychotic.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Stop it.
Gordon, obviously you have some other personal family stuff that you're waiting on also. Is this injury impact at all when you would potentially decide to go home? Or is it kind of two separate things still?
I mean, I think it's two separate things, but it's something that we're, you know, I'm taking a look at, and I mean, it's just very unfortunate that it's the timing of the whole deal, and so I think just try to take it day by day, and you know, we're looking at scheduling for the baby and all that stuff, so it's taking it day by day.
Okay, well, what we're dancing around there is that his wife Robin, i.e. Penelope, is due in September, and he's going to have to leave the bubble for that, never mind his injury. And they're dancing around inducing labor to time out with his rehab, which Danny Ainge talked about this morning on TNR. Gordon Hayward just alluded to himself there in that cut, and apparently Robin wants no part of, because she's getting angry with people on social media implying it, right?
Yeah, she was all up in arms on Instagram, you know, going after people in her Instagram stories who were like, you know, people are just the worst.
I
mean, like,
so I posted that so you guys would realize that nobody in the right mind would ask a pregnant person to induce early for basketball. So I said that because many of you guys have also messaged me asking me to get induced, which I don't really give a shit because I don't know any of you people, but no, the team did not actually ask me, so.
Okay, so sounds like they did. I don't know. It sounds like they're talking about it. You know, you have a thought, Maz?
Well, so first of all, hearing her tell people to F off makes me kind of like her.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, this is great. Way to go, Robin. Good for you.
So, but I will say that when Hayward was talking about it, clearly, you know, he was opening that door. And so if, you know, the idea of like him trying to minimize the window that he's gone, I give him credit for that.
He has no shot. Have you heard any of this stuff? Like when she comes in and he's playing video games? It's like a 10-year-old being summoned to the dinner table. There's no way he's convincing her to do anything. If he that's probably why he hasn't left the bubble. Because he's like, if he leaves the bubble and goes home, he's just going to get bossed around the whole time. So he's like, oh, I'll just stay in the bubble under the guise of rehabilitating my ankle. She runs the show. No question about
she's
that.
She's got spunk, man.
Yeah, I like her. I like. In fact, I wish Gordon had a little more of Robin's attitude.
Yep.
He'd be a better player.
I agree.
I like her a lot.
Be that as it may. Is his absence, Gasper, a death knell? Is it a tipping point for the Celtics?
I don't think it's a death knell, but I do think it's a very, very significant blow, and it makes it obviously a lot harder for them to ultimately get out of the East, which is really sort of what the goal is, right? And part of that is because not only has he played really well, but they just don't have a lot of depth. Like, they're not in a position depth-wise to replace a guy who averages 17.5 points per game. Who's going to help them do that?
Nobody.
They don't. They're a very front-loaded team. You know, their front five, six guys you feel really good about. But after that, you're asking a lot of guys that are basically replacement-level players.
Okay, but isn't that fine in the NBA? Isn't that fine?
I think it's fine if one of those guys is an absolutely transcendent Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Steph Curry type of player. They don't have that guy.
Okay, so you can say that their number one and two and three isn't at that elite level, but that's sort of independent of the bench thing, I think. I think it still comes down to the elite status of your top players, and that's what we've said for years. That's what we hammered the Celtics for all those bridgey teams. That, again, neat, you go nine deep. What does that mean? It's all about your one, two, and three. So, I mean, my point is, you say, you know, can score 17 points a game. How often can he, and how often did he reliably do that against good competition the last 3 years? You know, I don't think he was there often in those games. And so the net loss isn't really that much. I mean, that's sort of my take on that.
Well,
I do want your thought.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm just going to say quickly, I think the other thing you have to factor in is now this puts more of an onus and a burden on Kemba Walker, who already has the knee. You know, Gordon Hayward was a little bit of your Kemba insurance, and he could sort of play the point and facilitate and take a little burden off Kemba. So now you can talk about their front. You know, so you want to talk about their three best guys, Tatum, Brown, Walker, who one of those guys is hampered in Kemba Walker. And now we go to Marcus Smart, who we all love. But do you want him out there trying to score 17 a game?
Do I want Kemba Walker out there scoring
17? No. Do you want Marcus Smart out there trying to score 17 a game?
No, I don't want him shooting much. No, I don't. I don't, but I'm okay putting more on Kemba Walker. That's fine.
With the knee? But can you rely on that with the knee?
This is what I was saying.
I think that's really risky to make it through the next, let's say, two rounds with Kemba Walker averaging 35, 36 minutes a night and 20 points per game you know, if that's what you need to get out of the East, I would say good luck.
No, I think he'll do it, and I think he can do it. I think that's why you pay him the money. That's why you replaced him as a poor man's Kyrie Irving. And no, I put it on Kemba Walker. If he's that good, he's supposed to be that good. He can do that.
He's not that good.
Okay, well, I think he's that good, but I also think he's hurt. Don't.
He's an injury.
I mean, the knees looked amazing in the bubble, but we're only two games into a playoff series. Like, this is going to be a grind for him. So to expect that he's going to look like this the whole way through, I just don't think is real. Like, this is not like a one-time knee injury. I think he's going to have this the rest of his career.
Okay, well, let's see about that. Here's the thing I really want to get to. That Memphis pick is finally in, mercifully. Mercifully. Okay, we can stop talking about what the Kings are doing, what the Grizzlies are doing, what every other team is doing, because the draft pick, you know, bounty, all the permutations, draft picks, it's finally over. They have no other dangling extra picks, right? It's all over? Or do they still have a Clippers pick somewhere?
No, this is it unless they flip one, which a lot of people think they're going to try and do flip one.
Okay, so fine, okay, but that's we don't have that yet. Now it's all in, it's all over, and for all of the draft pick permutations, you've got exactly like I said yesterday, one of my dingleberries. You got nothing. 14, 26, and 30, which means nothing. But what's your takeaway on the Grizzly pick there, Gasper?
Oh, well, so I'm going to take a victory lap here cuz last year at the NBA draft lottery, I tweeted out immediately afterwards, disastrous NBA draft lottery for the Celtics, and it got shouted down on Twitter by Celtics. What do you mean? What are you talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. Well, Memphis moving up to the number 2 pick from number 8 and allowing them to draft Ja Morant, I called it at the time, said, this is going to be Sacramento pick 2.0. The Sacramento pick, we all thought that was going to be great. Jim Murray was on top of this. Sacramento happened to be for real that 1 year, 2018, 2019. The pick ends up being the last pick of the lottery, number 14. What's the Memphis pick this year?
14.
Number 14, the last pick of the lottery. So I was dead on with that. It's probably the thing I've been the most right about in my entire career covering sports. And I was getting shouted down by green teamers left and right. What do you mean it's disastrous? What do you mean? And that's not even factoring in the fact that I called that the Lakers getting that number 3 pick meant they were getting Anthony Davis.
I love it again.
Both those things happened. And people were like, what are you talking about? It only would have been disastrous if the Knicks got Zion Williamson. Nope, it was disastrous.
Well, you're hanging your career on that. That doesn't seem much, Gasper.
Yeah, I know. What can I say?
But Gasper Blinani.
Do it.
Yeah, it doesn't happen much.
It's so annoying. And I was as intricate with you as Gasper was, but I felt it with that Philly trade. That's like, you know, everyone's taking their pants off for what Danny did and what he got in return. And I kept trying to say to people that it's not about the return. It's about who you pick. Okay. It's about who you pick. The brilliance of the trade with the Sixers. I know this is a separate trade, but it all, you know, we were following the Kings first and then we were following the Grizzlies. The point is, can you pick the player or not? The brilliance of the Tatum draft year was that he identified Tatum over Fultz and Ball when everyone else had Fultz and Ball number 1 and 2. And Danny said, no, it's Tatum. And that's the extra pick. This happens with Patriots fans all the time too, right, Chris? It's like, oh, look at how they manipulated the draft board. They got the second for this third just by passing on. And then they draft Jordan Richards. It's like, so what did that do for you? Oh, they manipulated their free agents to get this compensatory pick, and then they draft Rivers or Antonio Garcia, who never makes the – it's like, it doesn't matter this dinking around with your draft picks. What matters is who you pick. So they trade with Philly. They get Tatum. They, you know, bail on Fultz. They nailed that. They get this extra first-round pick that everyone thinks is going to be this high lottery pick, and we're gonna duplicate what Red Auerbach did in the early 80s when he traded, was it Joe Barry Carroll?
Yes, Joe Barely Cares, as he was known.
Okay, so what ended up being Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale.
Correct.
Right? It's like, no, what you got was Jason Tatum and Romeo Langford? Is that what it ended up being? That
yeah,
play?
Yeah,
that
Romeo was the pick. And I do like Romeo. But look, I can't blame. It's not quite the same. I do love your analogy because I just love the blahing of the Patriots.
Oh,
it's not quite the same in that, look, Danny did a really good thing. I think every GM in the NBA would have done what he did, and I think they all admired it. They just had some really bad luck, to be honest. But the fact that people like wouldn't acknowledge that you know, last year, this situation with Ja Morant going to Memphis was damaging to the pick. And now I have people saying to me, well, it doesn't matter because they got Tatum and Brown. So if you had been in a situation last year where, like, you know, Sacramento's pick landed in the top 3 or top 2 and you got Ja Morant, or you couldn't get the number 1 pick, it was number 1 protected, but you got Ja Morant, so the Celtics fan would be saying, well, it doesn't matter if Ja's good or not because we already have Tatum or Brown. please. You'd be pants off for the fact you got the number two pick. Now it doesn't matter because it didn't work out.
It's not as bad. Bill really does it.
Yeah, I agree.
Bill with the draft pick, it is Bill playing with himself. You know, I'll send you a second for 2/3, and I'll take the 2/3 and move up, and then the Patriots fan goes, oh, that's why Bill's Bill, because he maximized the value. And then he drafts Duke Dawson. It's like, so what's the point? Wait, it's not about that dinking around with the draft picks. Like, anyone could do that. Anyone could pull it out and play with themselves and trade a third for a second, then take the 2/3. Like, what does that take? All it takes is your willingness to dink around with yourself.
Yeah, it takes balls, Felga.
No, it doesn't. It just takes the patience to screw around. The only thing that matters is, can you tell who can play and who can't play, and do you pick the right guy? Ainge nailed that draft. He got Tatum while everyone else was in on Fultz and Ball, and that's the brilliance. This other draft pick stuff is just mental masturbation. And more often than not, it doesn't work out. And this one didn't work out. So can we finally stop with this? Oh, but they got an extra. Oh, Brady's going to give them an extra third. Yeah, what are they going to do with it? What are they going to do with that extra third? They'll package it for 2 seconds, and then they'll draft it. They'll trade down for that, and then they'll take that guy, and they'll draft this one, and then they'll draft Tavon Wilson. It's like, so what's the point?
Yeah, but Felger, NBA mock draft.net has him taking some guy from France.
Oh, my God.
Oh, is it Killian Hayes or Theo Maladon? Which one?
It's Maladon.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
By the way, so now they're at 14, 26, yeah, and 30. What are they going to get for that, Chris? Like, what kind of players are going to be?
You know, let's see how it works out. I would say if I were them, here's what I would do. You don't need 26 and 30. We don't need another Jicic or Gershon Yabusele because they don't have roster spots for these guys. So I would try and package 26 or 30 or even 26 and 30 and move up from 14 and see if I can get up to, say, 9, 10, 11. That's much harder to do in the NBA than it is in the NFL. But if you can get up there, I think you could get Killian Hayes, who's the better French point guard, or this kid Aaron Nesmith from Vanderbilt, who's going to come into the league day one and be able to knock down shots.
Shut up.
As a shooter.
Don't encourage the Celtics fans, Chris. Don't encourage
No, I'm just saying.
The better French point guard.
He is.
What are you going to get, a half dozen croissants too?
No, just two guys, Killian Hayes and Theo Maladon. Killian Hayes is regarded as the better French point guard.
The better French point guard. I want the other guy.
That's in the smallest, the tallest small guy. Yeah, it's like.
You guys are ridiculous.
He played for a team called Ulm.
Ulm. I'd rather have a guy from Lithuania.
Or Sadiq Bey, the kid from Villanova. I think if you could move up a little bit. But this is generally regarded as sort of a
crap draft.
mediocre eye of the beholder draft.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the first French point guard. That's the guy I like.
Well, they could use a point guard because who knows what's going to happen with Kemba. So
give me the third Bulgarian shooting guard, and I think we're all set. All right, long
Tony,
commercial.
The Lithuanians are where you want to go.
Long commercial-free segment is next.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go on the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Not complaining.
Oh, you had a mean boss. Aw.
It's just Felger.
No. It's always no.
Felger Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for doing this. My question is about Tom, and after having a week of practices with him, I know you had the year off, but does it feel like you guys are back on the same page? Does it feel like old times? And how does his arm look to you so far?
Well, I'll go with how does his arm look? His arm looks like I first got into the league. I think he was 32 or 33 years old, and his arm may actually be stronger than when he was 33 when I first got to the league, which is incredible. But I would say, myself going out there, I was a little rusty getting used to the game of football. I still got a lot of ways to go. I got a lot of improvements to still make. from my conditioning to knowing the playbook to just, you know, getting the feel of the football game. But the first, you know, couple practices were a little weird. It was fast, but now it's starting to get to like to the point to where we left off about, you know, 18 months ago. So, and that's a good feeling. It's a good feeling when we connect with a pass and all that good stuff. So that's the feeling it's starting to be. And that's the feeling that we're trying to get to every single day.
Gronkowski spoke yesterday. He and Brady down in Tampa. Chris, before we let you go, you got a Brady thought. Maybe a little Brady time.
Oh, I mean, you know, it seems like he looks pretty good down there. I love how they keep putting out the videos. You can tell. And like, and I almost feel like Tom maybe has some input on this. Like the videos the Buccaneers put out, it's not him with these like surgical passes. Every video is him throwing a 40, 50 yard bomb to like Mike Evans or Chris Godwin, because that was the knock, right? And even I said, I didn't think it was the greatest fit for him in that system because Aarons is a vertical guy. It's like seven step drops, you know, stand back there, let a guy get 40 yards downfield. People were saying, oh, I don't know if Brady can make those throws anymore. And the Patriots had to protect him. So every video you see that the Bucs tweet out, like I said, it's Brady just, it's the old NFL films. He launches it and it's like 30 seconds of the ball just spiraling through the air. And then it drops into the hands of Mike Evans and it's like a 65 yard touchdown. And the ball went, you know, 58 yards in the air. So I don't think that that is a coincidence that that's what you're seeing down there. I think, I'll tell you, I think he's going to light it up. Now, it's hard because I don't, there's no preseason games. I'm not playing paying close attention to them. My biggest question with that team is that offensive line any good? And when the bullets are live, well, Tom, because I thought the last couple of years, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, but I thought Tom at times sort of slipped into preservation mode, you know?
Chuck and duck?
Not chuck and duck, but
I'm using that loosely.
Yeah, you know, it was sort of preservation mode. Like, live to play another play. Like, this play's over, I'll get the next one. Maybe a little sooner than earlier in his career. And if that offensive line isn't good, and the way that offense is built, that's the thing I feel like could trip them up, you know, and it's hard to gauge that without seeing them against real live competition.
Well, he's just put so much into it that I'd be stunned if he doesn't have a great year. Stunned. And the comparison we've been drawing today is that Tom Brady at 43, fresh as lettuce out there every day, you know, looking good, feeling great, and the Patriots' 24-year-old heir apparent can't make it through the second week of camp without some sort of muscle twinge. And that's got to be frustrating, and that is an indictment. They deserve to be scrutinized for that, and so we're doing it. So we'll pick that up on the other side. Gasper, we'll have to get to the Bruins coming off the ice and the chemistry another time.
I know. Oh, come on. I don't get touchy-feely Felger talking about hockey hugs. I want to know who your NBA Finals pick is based on basketball bro hugs.
I think that's
what you base it on now.
Who
hugs whom?
I got to see it. I got to see it. I got to feel it, Gasper. But like I said, we'll do it some other time. Is there a Gasper and Murray extravaganza tomorrow?
Yeah, for the first time in weeks. We'll be on at 11 a.m. We got the Celtics show at noon, so please join us.
Yeah, we'll wrap up. We'll give you a recap of tonight's Celtics 76ers playoff game.
Yeah, they'll be up 3-0.
And let me know how they come off the floor.
I will.
And then I'll give you your analysis. Chris, thanks for coming in.
Good to see you guys.
Okay, buddy. I promise. Well, we put the phones to the side there for that hour. We'll get right back to them after the top of the hour. Everything on the table. It's agenda-free, driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. Everything from the week. So we've hit a lot today, though, on Stidham. Jared Stidham's already hurt. And what does that mean for the Patriots' quarterback situation and the whole transition plan in general? But you can weigh in on whatever you want. Promise right to you after Murray's 90-second update. There are no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.